Kevin D. Annett is a Canadian writer and former minister of the United Church of Canada. Annett graduated from the University of British Columbia with a bachelor's degree in anthropology and a master's degree in political science. Annett has written two books on the subject of residential school abuse in Canada. In 2006, Kevin produced a documentary on this topic called Unrepentant. Additionally, he created and hosted Hidden from History, a public affairs and human rights program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio from 2001 until the station shut him down in 2010. On previous programs with Kevin, we have talked about the worldwide system of abuse by church and state upon children and adults. Today, he's back on the program to discuss the historic lawsuit that is being filed by Kevin Annett on behalf of the ITCCS, International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, and Jason Bowman of the Association of Citizen Prosecutors, ACP, in federal court against the Church and Crown. Thank you for coming back on the program again, Kevin. It's good to talk to you once more. How have you been, Kevin, since we last spoke?
Oh, I've been fine. Thank you for asking. I've been very busy in Canada with an application in federal court to bring the Vatican and the Crown of England to trial for its crimes. So it's been a very good step forward.
Can you run us through some of the procedures of this and what this entails and how it's even possible, I guess?
Well, what happens in Canada is the federal court has jurisdiction to issue a direct indictment against any party that can be proved to have been involved in a criminal action. For example, criminal conspiracy or actually causing harm against others. What's happened is a man named Jason Bowman, who's a common law legal expert, he's with a group called the Association of Citizen Prosecutors. He approached me a couple of months ago and suggested that because of all the evidence we have linking the Pope and the Crown of England to the disappearance and the killings, not only of children in the past in the Indian boarding schools, but with the policies in the church today that actually aid and protect child rapists among the clergy, because of all that, he thought we had a very good case. And so on July 4th, he went into a federal court in Toronto, presented the argument before a federal court judge, and he was given leave to proceed, which he plans to do in the coming week. So we'll actually be presenting the evidence we have, naming these heads of corporations, church, government, and also big pharmaceutical companies as being involved in crimes against humanity.
So is this only within the jurisdiction of Canada, or how does this work?
Well, it's within a federal court in Canada, but, for example, it has the power to ask other courts in other countries to intervene and bring similar charges against officials, say, in the Catholic Church in their own country. And, for example, there have been efforts in Spain to and in the International Criminal Court in Brussels to actually charge the Pope in those courts. And so we're actually linking up with the legal efforts in other countries to name this, because it's an international corporation, the oldest one on the planet, of course, the Roman Catholic Church, is at the heart of many of these crimes. And so we hope to be hoping this will have a reciprocal effect in other courts in other countries.
Tell us how Big Pharma is a part of this, and also what company specifically we're talking about.
Well, for example, we're looking at the case of a long history that the Vatican has had with Eli Lilly and Bayer Corporation, going back to the years before World War II, where, of course, these were Nazi corporations. The Catholic Church in their orphanages and Indian schools around the world have been testing drugs from these corporations on involuntary test subjects, often many children who would die or be permanently, you know, destroyed by this drug testing. We have documented cases of modern pharmaceutical companies like GlaxoSmithKline using children in these orphanages and other places for drug testing. So there's a direct link between the churches and these big pharma companies.
So it's you and primarily with Jason Bowman. What's your role in this, Kevin, right now?
Well, he and I are the co-plaintiffs, so we are named in the action in the papers that are being filed. For example, we're naming the churches in Canada, the United Catholic and Anglican Churches, the Church of England, and the Queen of England as the head of that church, as being complicit in not only planning these crimes of genocide against Native people here, but actually covering it up through modern-day actions by the government and the churches to minimize the extent of the crimes and to silence eyewitnesses and that kind of thing.
Incredible. I mean, so what has happened so far now? Get us up to speed, and then what consequence is going to happen? This might be, could this be canceled pretty quick or turned into a big case and go on for years and years? What do you think?
Well, there's some interesting changes that have happened, and I think we stand a better chance now than we would have, say, a year ago. For one of the reasons is, for the first time in history, a member of the Catholic hierarchy has actually gone to jail in America for covering up child rape by priests in the Philadelphia diocese. This William Lynn was a bishop, and he and over a quarter of all the clergy in Philadelphia were involved in child trafficking. He's gone to jail now. That set a precedent. It isn't just low-level priests anymore. It's members of the hierarchy that are following a policy from Rome, which orders them to protect child rapists. So I think courts understand that you can't ignore this issue anymore, and that could be some of the reason. But the other reason, too, of course, is that there's such public awareness now. They can't ignore this issue anymore. We have lots of eyewitnesses lined up who saw children being killed, being buried at Indian residential schools. We've started digs at one of the schools at the Mohawk Institute in Brantford, where we've already found some human remains and bits of clothing from school uniforms. You know, so all of this evidence is coming to bear, and I think it's one of the reasons the court realizes that, well, they have to at least acknowledge it. How far they're going to willing to let it go is another question. Right now, we'll have to wait till next week to see what actually happens in court. But we're going to begin, if we're given further permission from the judge, we're going to be issuing requests for summonses and arrest warrants mm-hmm. against some of these church and government and corporate officials.
And how would that work? I mean, let's say that you're putting the Pope on the spot. How would that work? Would he come to Canada and, you know?
Well, he's represented in many countries by what's called a papal nuncio. We would present the summons to the papal nuncio, and he represents the Pope legally and in every other way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also been an attempt by lawyers in America to actually serve Joseph Ratzinger in Rome directly. And I'll be coming to Europe in September and October, going to Rome and attempting to serve these court papers from the federal court in Canada on the Pope, the Queen of England, and other parties that we name.
And so how do you go about doing that? Do you know where to go, who to contact? I guess there's a couple of middlemen in the center of this.
Well, in Rome, it's the Curia, the College of Cardinals, that are really the power.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting right now is there's a power struggle going on. There's a faction of cardinals in Rome who actually want Ratzinger out. And they are the ones who have been leaking this, you know, it's called the Vatileak scandal, where they're trying to pin it on the butler. But in fact, it's the cardinals who have leaked very incriminating evidence about Ratzinger to the Italian media. 2 years ago when I was in Rome, I actually received a communication from one of those cardinals showing some sympathy for what we're doing. So I think that there are divisions within the Vatican that we can exploit.
Hmm. Now, what else do you know about Vatileaks? We've briefly followed this story. Is there any other interesting tidbits of this you can talk a little bit about?
Well, what I was given some information from some groups of survivors of priest abuse in Italy. There's a number of people who've been holding hunger strikes, men who were harmed by priests when they were children. One of these men has access to church sources, and he says that what was actually leaked, and is in the process of being leaked, is not just about the sex scandal, but the fact that Ratzinger was awarding contracts to members of his family and friends through Catholic businesses and that, and he's directly involved in possibly even the embezzlement of Vatican funds. And whether that's a setup or not, it's at least what's in the papers. And I'm not sure the extent to which that's been revealed yet in the Italian press. There's been an attempt by the Vatican lawyers to stop all of this, of course, but it's gradually coming out more and more.
Oh, boy. Now, what is this policy, again, that the Pope set up to protect child rapists? Is this something on paper that you can refer to?
Yes, it's actually something you can read online. It's posted at hiddennolonger.com on my book there in one of the appendices. And it's called Crimen Solicitanus. It was a policy actually adopted formally by the Vatican in 1962. Joseph Ratzinger then, as a priest, helped formulate it. And what it says is that when children are harmed in any Catholic parish anywhere in the world, the priest and the bishop are under papal order to suppress the evidence of that, to hide, to protect the child rapist, never to tell the police, and to silence the victim. And if they don't do that, they can be excommunicated. So in effect, it says that raping a child is not a crime, it's just a sin. But talking about it within the church is a crime that can get you thrown out.
Wow.
And even held in a papal prison. If you release this information. So it's a formal policy. It's a criminal conspiracy to hide and protect child rape all over the world. And that's an enormous obstruction of justice and a crime against humanity. And that's one of the reasons that lawyers all over are so interested in that, because it's from the very top of the church.
I mean, 1964, that's amazing. That's a long time. How come no one else has picked up on this before?
Well, that's a good question. It's a very well-kept secret. The only reason it got known is a source inside the Vatican in 2007 released it to the London Observer newspaper, and they're the ones who first ran it. But again, it was the source within the church who wanted to see this evidence come out.
That's just crazy. Wow, what a story. So obviously this is a long process. It's beginning. You've been detailing a lot of the crimes in the past, and we have talked about that in the past with you on the program as well. But can you just briefly give our listeners a little bit of on the background on some of the crimes we've been talking about pertaining to the Vatican and what's been going on in Canada here?
Well, for almost 20 years now, I've helped document this with survivors of these Indian boarding schools. It's every crime against humanity that's listed as genocide under international law. Over half the children died in these institutions, over 50,000 children over a century. They were deliberately starved, gang raped as a matter of policy whenever they came into the school. They were used in slave labor, medical experimentation. There was a sterilization program whereby children who wouldn't become Christians and their families were all sterilized. Those are laws on the books that we published. A lot of these crimes are posted at hiddennolonger.com. We've tried over the years to get international intervention on these things, and what we found is that Canada's image as a liberal nation has really blocked, until recently, the attention of the world. People just can't believe Canada and the churches could have committed these crimes. But now that we've forced an apology out of the federal government in 2008, and we've actually begun identifying grave sites where these children are buried, we're going to the next step, which is repatriating the remains, doing forensic analysis on the remains. And in the federal court, but also other courts in Europe, we hope to finally bring this evidence to try to indict these heads of churches and governments for these crimes.
How is the dig going? We talked about that briefly last time as well. I think you proceeded since then on a further excavation, if we can call it that.
Yeah, we have. We've actually had forensic specialists in America identify most of the bones we had covered at the Mohawk Institute turned out to be animal. But there were scatterings of child's bones in among these pig and cow remains, along with bits of uniform from the school buttons and that kinds of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, independently, a group of Ojibwe parents in northern Ontario went about and started doing digs at the Church of England School in Sioux Lookout, and they also have uncovered human remains. So this is beginning to spread across the country, Native families taking action on their own in a way that the police can't cover it up, or as they've done in the past. So we're looking forward in the coming year to bring in forensic teams, archaeological teams, to do really massive excavations to finally open the lid on the real story.
Now, if we zoom out and face the reality that there is a power elite, and of course that this is the church and the crown is part of that, how real is it that something really could happen in this case to the head of church and the crown, Kevin?
Well, in theory it's very possible. Politically, whether the federal court will go ahead and help us indict the party that they're answerable to. You see, they're a crown-appointed judge in that court, and in other it's questionable whether that'll happen. It's a matter, I think, of the public and political pressure we bring to bear. Like with anything, it's the extent to which we expose and embarrass these parties. And, previously in Canadian courts, attempts to bring charges of genocide against the Crown have all been ruled ultra vires or outside the jurisdiction of the court. But even if it doesn't work in this federal court, that works to our advantage because when we go to international courts, the first thing they say is you have to have exhausted all domestic legal remedies,
mm-hmm.
and we will have if the court rejects our case. Then we go to Brussels. Then we have solid evidence to show that, yes, the Canadian courts are covering this up. We need international legal intervention on this.
Mm, okay, well, because I was going to ask you, the judge, if he has the legal power, I guess, within Canada to some minor extent go after the Queen.
He probably doesn't formally, but he would have the power to issue indictments against individual ministers of the Crown. We could shoot a bit lower and at least definitely implicate people whose actions can be linked directly to the Crown. And one of the cases we have of that is we have eyewitnesses describing how the Queen of England and Prince Philip actually left a residential school in October 1964 in British Columbia in the company of 10 children, 10 native children, and none of those children were ever seen again. We wrote to Buckingham Palace asking for the Queen to respond, and we've never heard anything. But, you know, this is not uncommon. It wasn't uncommon for that to go on in residential schools where high officials would come and just take children away and they were never seen again. That's the kind of thing we're documenting.
Wow, this is just incredible. Now, so again, maybe we can talk a little bit about what's going to happen next here and how long you think it's going to take, because, I mean, there must be a heck of a difficult process to weave all this together. And who is, excuse me, let's bring up the name here again, is Jason Bowman, kind of, has he pulled all the paperwork and everything together for this and everything is kind of ready to go at this stage?
Well, it is. As you can imagine, without a staff or a lot of money, it's a long process. It's kind of the ultimate David and Goliath battle here,
yeah,
legally. But at the same time, we've been getting dozens of phone calls and emails from people all over the world, and especially Canada, who want to be part of this, who want to bring a suit against the church, the state, and Big Pharma for crimes that happen against them. So we have an enormous potential support for this. Unfortunately, we've also been facing a lot of attacks from operatives who were sending out smears on the Internet, who show up at our press conferences to attack us. I mean, this is the kind of thing we've done in the past. Whenever we get close to challenging these people responsible for these crimes, these attacks begin. So in one sense, you could say it shows we're on the right track, that they're indicating by that they don't want this stuff brought out.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Has, or do you think that the mainstream media will talk about this in any regard?
They're going to have to eventually. It's like the tribunal we did in 1998. At first they ignored it. Eventually they had to start addressing the issue. It'll be the same thing, but even more dramatically with this, because we will have the evidence finally in a court of law on the public record. And not just documentation and eyewitnesses, but the bones, the physical evidence that these children died.
And you have... You're allowed to do this, to dig and to grab this evidence, or do you have to do that with the right people there, police present, or what? How does that work?
Well, under Canadian law, you're not allowed to disturb a gravesite. But if they admit it's a gravesite, they then have to explain why they've never investigated continual requests by Native families to help locate the children who died.
Mm-hmm.
The Royal Canadian Mounted Police have time and again refused to even go to these gravesites to investigate. They've obstructed justice. On the other hand, Canadian law is funny because it implicitly recognizes the original native title to the land. So, for example, in the Mohawk Institute on the Yonge-Wahanwe Six Nations land in Brantford, Ontario, we went and we obtained permission of the hereditary elders of that land to dig on their territory. We had elders there with us when we first broke the soil. As a matter of fact, it was a native elder who did the first digging. And I found these bones of these children. And the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the local police did not intervene. They didn't stop us because they recognize that this is native land. So when you extend on native sovereignty, we're actually, that's one of our aces in our hand, that we have that authorization from the native community under their tribal law.
Okay, and that supersedes whatever the jurisdiction is of Canada right there.
It's a parallel jurisdiction. It's the native nations in many places don't recognize the authority of the crown. It was an imposition, forced on them, and they say we don't recognize the crown authority. On the other hand, you get government-funded native chiefs who do recognize it. So it's kind of a a dual power kind of situation.
It's a mixed bag, and it's a little bit difficult to know what's what there in terms of legal. But again, isn't it at the end of the day who you choose to just side with? If this is an issue of dispute, I mean, one can really, you know, say what the other one can or can't do, right?
Exactly. It's like in any country that breaks away, declares sovereignty, say India or Ireland or America, they all began by saying, we sever ties, we have our own legal system, we don't recognize your courts or your parliament anymore. Native people are beginning to do exactly that, and we actually are encouraging white Canadians to disavow their affiliation with the Crown to set up their own republic so that we can create common law courts where the Crown and the churches can finally be put on trial. So this is part of a political transformation that I think is needed as well.
Yeah, interesting. A lot of that's going on in Canada. A lot of people are waking up, and within the Commonwealth as well, in the UK, and it's happening in America. So it's worldwide, yeah. And it's a lot of lawsuits as well happening on this kind of level in different areas of life. So it's pretty interesting. Where it's kind of an intense period right now for a lot of people.
It really is, and we're getting support from all over the world, people saying exactly the same thing, that the police and the governments have colluded with the churches, they're not investigating. So I say, well, then we evoke common law. We set up our own de jure common law courts. People are now even talking about performing citizens' arrests on known child-raping priests who the police won't investigate. And in America and in Ireland, they're already know of child-raping priests is still in the pulpit who they're going to remove. They're going to defrock them publicly and shame them and tell them to leave the church and never come back. That's the kind of citizens' action that is really needed, I think, to show that people, you know, can take action and have to take action to protect their own children.
Now, the kind of behavior that you've been talking about throughout the years here of what the church and the Crown has been doing, maybe you can enlighten us about this, if this is anything in regard that has diminished, and if not, it seems to be endemic within the organization itself. So with that in mind, how would you like to see this turn out? Is there a best case scenario for you here?
I think the best case scenario is actually dismantling these church corporations and challenging the attitudes which gave rise to many of these things. You see, this wasn't just for economic motives, grabbing the land, locking up children in these orphanages where they made a lot of money off them. It was a basic belief, in especially in Roman Catholicism, that children are born in a state of fallenness, that creation is corrupt, that something is suspect in innocence, and that children have to be violently subordinated and made to think and act in a certain way. That's right in European culture, and it's many centuries old. It justifies a lot of these crimes, and it allows many of these criminals to get away with it, with what they're doing. So I think we have to really look in the mirror, look at where we've come from, ask ourselves, how can we have committed this massive genocide and assault on children, and change the way we think and act, starting with, dismantling these church corporations. I often say to people, you can be a Christian without going to church. Just do it like the early Christians did and just do it out of your own home. Disavow any ties with these church corporations. Some of the Catholic priests I know have actually started doing that. They're beginning to disaffiliate from Rome. And I think more and more of that needs to happen.
Now, of course, Kevin, you have a background as a priest. Do you still consider yourself as a Christian at this stage?
I don't call myself that. I don't consider the need to carry a label like that, especially with the connotation and the legacy of genocide and conquest and empire around the term Christianity. No, I mean, I very much am a believer in Jesus and his teachings as a prophet, as an example for the world. But I've always believed, even when I was in the church, that people need to follow their own path, that there's 6 billion ways to truth, and nobody should impose spiritual or any kind of conformity on others in the name of God. So, I'm evolving all the time, just like all of us, I guess.
Absolutely. It's always been an incredible mystery to me how, if you study the majority anyway of the teachings of Jesus, how things could get so wrong onto the level of what the church has been doing and how they've been acting. It's just, it's incredible, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I think one of the reasons that happened historically was Christianity was exterminated when the church merged with the Roman Empire, became a corporation, the Church of Rome, in the year 317. They eliminated the most basic teaching of Jesus, which is to love your enemy and not to take up arms in war. And after that, it's interesting, just 50 years apart in the Church of Rome, before Constantine, the church policy was anyone who became a soldier was expelled from the church. after Constantine, the same church said, if you don't serve the emperor, you're expelled from the church, if you don't serve as a soldier. So there was a complete counter-revolution, and you had Christendom created, which is really just a new kind of empire, and it's caused all this destruction ever since.
Now, let's say that the Roman Catholic Church was dissembled, as you suggest, because of what's going to happen next year. Wouldn't they just set it up again? What would happen, do you think?
Quite possibly. That's why I said that we have to really examine the whole mindset, the way these churches operate. Basically, no church should be above the law. It shouldn't have their own separate thing that they call canon law, where for centuries priests have been tried in their own courts, that the child raping priests can be protected, and that the legal authorities never intervene. The whole notion that not just the Pope, but groups like the Grand Master of the Knights of Malta, which is a church organization going back centuries, they're all considered heads of state with their own passports, representation at the United Nations. That should not be allowed to be. There should be a complete separation of church and state. Churches should not have that kind of power. And the fact that the church, Catholic Church brings in $100 billion a year shows you what you're dealing with. That kind of big corporation's got to be broken up and not be allowed to be above the law ever again. For example, one of the things we're calling for is for all priests to be licensed as public servants so that if they harm a child, they can lose their license and they stop being a priest. That the church should surrender its wealth. Basically, what happened in France at the time of the French Revolution, where the property of the church was nationalized and the priests were made civil servants, mm-hmm. that's the kind of change that are needed just to break the power of this big corporation.
Back for a moment to the sovereign military order of the Knights of Malta, as you mentioned. Have you any other further evidence that they have been involved in the same kind of behavior as the church and crown?
Very much. As a matter of fact, Knights of Malta, as you know, they represent elites all over the world. And in fact, in some of the investigations we've done where children were being trafficked in churches and in Indian boarding schools, orphanages and that, there were Knights of Malta members fairly high in the governments who were named as being part of that child trafficking. We've documented that child trafficking is a whole separate case we're arguing. And it definitely implicates some of these elites. There were two Bilderberger members who were named in Canada as being part of not just child trafficking in the past, but ongoing attacks against Native people. So we definitely are naming them as one of the defendants.
I ask you this every time, Kevin, because I'm always left speechless about this when we talk about it as well. But again, I have to ask you, how do we explain this kind of behavior? How does it continue in the world?
Well, on a human level, when people are given endless amounts of power and they know that they can never be held accountable, it brings out the worst in people. It makes them think literally they're God, and they have utter disregard for the impact of their actions. But at the same time, when there's a whole institution at work and a mindset that says you have the right to do that, then these crimes are going to happen. When there's an enormous economic incentive in child trafficking and grabbing native lands and resources, then genocide becomes a useful tool of state and religion. And that's our history in the West, that genocide has been not a crime. It may be a crime under international law formally, but in practice, genocide and the extermination of the other has been at the heart of Western religion and politics and empire for many centuries. So that's part of the difficulty in dealing with this. We're dealing with the victors in a war who've never been brought to trial. So it may seem to be an impossible task, and yet there's an enormous awareness of this all over the world and a real awakening happening.
There's a couple of websites here, itccs.org. Also, of course, hiddennolonger.com that you mentioned before. These are great sources where people can go to read more, to follow along in the story, as we said before. Is there any other ways that people can help you guys out in any way?
Yes, actually, I'm coming to Europe in September and October. I'll be holding meetings all over the continent. And if people would like to contact me, set up a way for me to come and work with people in your own communities about these crimes, especially about the Catholic Church and the crimes against children, please contact me. I'll be leaving soon, but you can reach me anytime at my email, hiddenfromhistory1, like the number one, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
Okay, we'll have that up on the website as well. Now, what else should we mention about this historic lawsuit? Any other components that are important to discuss here, Kevin?
Well, it's just beginning, and on itccs.org, we'll be posting regular updates about the course of, you know, the judge's decision and that. I think the general thing to remember is it's an open class action lawsuit, so that means any number of people can be part of it. We've had groups, for example, mothers who've lost their children to, in the government child protective system, the children actually being trafficked by the government and the social workers and the police, like the case of Holly Grieg in England. That's one of the big components of this class action suit. So anyone who suffered that can be part of this. And like I say, start the similar action in their own court systems in their own countries. So I think the important thing is just to follow the progress of this find ways of applying it to your own situation.
Is this a the more the better kind of situation, or at this point do you guys need to focus on what you have at hand first and try to kind of deal with this because it's so big in itself, right?
Well, very much. We're focusing on a few basic issues: that church, state, and big pharma complicity in crimes against humanity. We're going to be focusing initially on the Canadian situation, like the government cover-up of the Indian residential school crimes that are going on through a whitewashed group called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is really set up to just suppress evidence and silence eyewitnesses. We're going to be exposing those kinds of government cover-up agencies in Canada, but it'll be like an expanding circle. And the important thing is to compile the evidence, and that's what the stage we're in now. So, yeah, it'll be a work that'll be in progress for, I believe, a number of years, and we just started.
Incredible. Big Pharma, again, Eli Lilly and Bayer, you mentioned those. What is there just a specific time frame you're focusing on there, or do you consider that this is something that has continued and actually not stopped at this stage?
Very much continuing. The best example of that recently is during the swine flu scare a few years ago. The native people were being forced to take Tamiflu drugs and swine flu vaccinations as guinea pigs because under the Indian Act, native people cannot refuse medical treatment. So they were literally going onto Indian reservations, the drug companies and the government agents and even some of the missionaries, and forcing these drugs onto native families. And many of them came down with swine flu. That's one of the things we're going to point to as ongoing crimes. And I know that there was a recent thing in the news how GlaxoSmithKline was named in a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit of having not reported destructive impacts of their vaccines and even those causing deaths, that they covered up those deaths. So some of the stuff that we're going to be documenting, and it has direct relevance, of course, to people in Europe because of the whole, you know, similar struggle you have there against Big Pharma.
Indeed, there's been a lot of lawsuits pertaining to this as well. And for the sake of the lawsuit you're getting involved in, so you can keep everything within, do you have to keep everything within a certain time frame, so to speak, that you have to focus on a certain period? Or can you include, can you be all inclusive here with your evidence?
There'd be no restrictions put on us. So it can be any point in time. It can be contemporary issues. As a matter of fact, the more we focus on what's happening now, the better, I believe, because it's always much more convincing to show that this is an immediate and ongoing crime against humanity.
Yeah, interesting. Now, how hopeful are you? Do you have a realization that, okay, this might not actually go down, but still hopeful and try to push through, or do you really consider this to potentially be successful, Kevin?
I think it can't help but be successful, not only in the awareness it generates, but in the legally as well. Like I say, if we're blocked in the federal court, we go to the international court. If we're blocked there, we have the power to set up within our own communities de jure common law courts. We also stand on tribal law, so we've been invited at an increasing number of native communities to set up these tribunals and investigations. The police continually hold back. They will not intervene when we operate with the permission of native elders. So we have a real strength there, and that's an example, I think, for the whole world of what you depend on. You know, not the government and church is responsible, you know, in their court system, but our own common law courts and tribal courts.
Definitely, Kevin. We always appreciate having you on, getting an update about what you guys are doing, and it's great work, of course. It must be very difficult to talk about this before, to just kind of be in that kind of atmosphere, if you will, of these kinds of atrocities, of course. But I always want to give you opportunity to just get something out here towards the end that you feel is important, or again, if there's something you feel we've kind of left out about this, Kevin.
Well, there's a lot we can always talk about. I urge people to just read the background at hiddennolonger.com, a lot of our evidence. But I think the message I'd like to leave with people is to recognize that this is an ongoing threat against our children, our families, because any child can be harmed in these, especially the Catholic Church that has the policy of cover-up, official policy from the top down, of protecting child rapists, any child can be harmed, and the insidious thing is that the police regularly protect these churches and governments, so we have to generate the refusal in our communities to go along with this. And I noticed in London today, I got an email that at the London Olympics, there's going to be a caravan of vehicles by protesters stopping the Olympic procession to protest government involvement in child trafficking in England.
Really?
And I think that's an amazing act. That's the kind of protest we need to do. We have to make it very, we have to create an enormous stink around this issue because our future, you know, as Native people often tell me, if you allow your children to be harmed and destroyed, you have no future as a culture. And we have to have zero tolerance for the harming of one child and change the laws so that's the case. So this is an ongoing struggle that needs to unite all of us across borders.
I agree. Children from all backgrounds, countries, and races are unfortunately dragged into this. How do you see overall that this cycle of abuse can be broken? Is it information and bringing it out into the light, or what can we do, as we always say?
Well, ultimately, you know, it takes generations to heal. Unfortunately, we have to, you know, the same approach to the assault on Mother Earth. It's the same system causing it. The violation of the innocence of the earth. We have to recreate ourselves from the bottom up. And I stand on natural law where we are given the earth as a garden equally. Lines of you know, division don't exist. We are meant to live according to what natives in Mohawk territory call the Tuura Wampum, equality and peace among each other. We have to try to enact that now in the new society we create. So, you know, all of the struggle is the hidden agenda, I think, from the good point of view, is that it's a way for us to reinvent our world and to live in a different way with one another. So, you know, that's kind of my long-term perspective in this, is that's more and more of what I speak to, what we build, not simply what we oppose, but what we create to replace it.
Tell us about your film as well, Hidden No Longer. It's available online, I believe, still. For people who are new to your work, this is really one of the best ways to get the background on you and what you've been working on, of course.
Yes, it's an award-winning documentary film. It's called Unrepentant. It's posted at hiddennolonger.com, so you can watch it. It's been translated into 5 different languages, and it's shown all over Europe, actually, regularly on Swiss and German television. We made it 5 years ago. It shows not only my story of how I began to uncover this, but eyewitnesses to crimes of murder and genocide in these Indian boarding schools. We're actually working on a sequel right now that we call Unrelenting, and it shows the what we're involved with now, how these crimes are ongoing and span the globe, and all the groups that we're now working with in Ireland and Australia and all over Europe and America. So it's very exciting, and you know, I often say to people, you have the technology now, any of us, to document this, get it up on YouTube, show these crimes right away, and people can learn very quickly. So that's part of what I'm doing in Europe. We're going to be shooting more footage for this new documentary.
Oh, wow, very good. Any estimate on when it's going to be out, or still far away, or is it close to finishing?
Been shooting in the fall and editing in the spring of 2013, and you know, hopefully in the coming year sometime. But I will definitely keep you posted about all that.
Excellent, thank you, Kevin. Now I want you to give out all the websites that you have out there, so people know where to go, and also if there's something for either Jason Bowman or the Association of Citizen Prosecutors, so if they have a website and there's information on there as well.
There is. As a matter of fact, you know, I don't have it at hand right now, but all of that information is posted most recently on itccs.org. And my computer isn't totally operative right now, but you can find the court documentation, Jason's website and email, and all of that at itccs.org. And that's the main site to be looking at, just to follow all of this work.
Absolutely. You're keeping busy, of course. So you're heading over to Europe next. And what's after that? Is it back to Canada then to pursue with the lawsuit here or what?
Well, eventually. But I've also been invited to speak in other places in the world now, down to Australia, to India. And there's been increasing interest of this in the Arab world and in Russia. As a matter of fact, there have been so many requests for my book in Russian that they've created a Russian language edition of it. This is my other book. It's called Unrepentant, Disrobing the Emperor, which is kind of my story about all this, which you can find at Amazon.com. It's published in England, but they've had to come out with a Russian edition now because of the interest there. So I expect to be traveling even further afield And, you know, because like we say, this is a crime all over the planet.
Now, I never hear much about Russia or the Orthodox Church. What do you know about that? Is it as bad as in Europe and Americas?
Well, we have reports all the time, you know, from other religions of child abuse. It's not confined to Christianity by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. I'm open to investigating any church. Don't forget, churches are closed kind of secret societies. Their clergy are sworn to secrecy, and that creates a breeding ground for many of these problems. On the other hand, you know, the old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It was interesting that President Vladimir Putin made a comment last year where he'd be willing to recognize the sovereignty of the Lakota people in America, maybe to get back in America for their recognition of the Chechnya Republic or something. But, you know, the point is that these differences among states can be used to our advantage to a certain degree. And in fact, in a few years ago in Belgium, the Belgian foreign minister quoted my book at the United Nations when he was criticized by Canada for what happened in Rwanda and in the Belgian Congo. He said, well, look at your own history before you criticize us. So this is what we're hoping to try to generate.
Now, it seems to be very difficult to pierce through the media, you know, mess, if you will, that's out there. And there's just so much information about, most cases, useless things as well. But these important issues always seem to be swept under the rug. But overall, though, are you still hopeful? Do you feel that it's actually coming through the cracks a little bit here in the recent years, Kevin?
In recent years, it definitely has. 10 years ago, you couldn't even talk about missing children, murdered children, and now people are talking a lot more about it. What that does is creates a climate where eyewitnesses are able and willing to come forward more. So we've seen increasingly numbers of people talking about this. But the other advantage is that insiders now feel it's safer to talk. And so you start, like what happened in Rome, where there's a falling out at the highest levels of power. We expect that to happen. In fact, I've already been approached by a number of people who have inside information on the history of these crimes by the church and government and corporations. So that's all changing. It's kind of like, you know, watching the Titanic slowly change course. Maybe it won't hit the iceberg. Who knows? Or maybe it already has, or else sinking. I don't know. But I do see changes, big changes happening, and the awareness of people now because of the internet and shows like yours, people know this all over the planet now, and it really helps in documenting it and in bringing pressure to bear on the guilty.
Have you noticed that people within the church, those who might be aligned with it or just behind it, that they see this simply as an attack on religion, and hence they kind of lash back at you and they try to hide behind you know, other things than actually facing the crimes at hand that you're talking about?
Well, they do, Henrik. You know, they do that all the time, especially the church hierarchy does that. They try to keep people in the pews afraid of being attacked. You know, it's like when any ruler does. If you create an external enemy, it unites their people under their control.
Yeah.
The churches are very adept at doing that. On the other hand, there's a long free church tradition where, you know, independent churches operate on a congregational basis and they don't have a big hierarchy. Those are the groups that tend to come to us to support us. Whenever we hold protests outside, say, Catholic churches, we get a lot of sympathy from people going into the church. It's the priests that have been ordered not to have anything to do with us. There's a great scare campaign around my name out there among the Christian community. They're the ones who tend to oppose us, but that's beginning to change as well. So, no, in the long run, I think people are forced. It's like you eventually have to accept truth because it has a power all to itself, and it can't be denied, really.
That's right. How many years have you been working with this now, Kevin? It's 10 more years?
No, it's been 20 years ago this summer. I arrived in Port Alberni as a minister where I began to learn these crimes. It's been 17 years since I was fired. So I began to document it right after my firing. It's 17 years now.
That's incredible. Now, is there any other way people can help you out, donations and things like that to keep you going, or how does that work for you?
Well, I keep trying to create PayPal accounts. They keep getting sabotaged. So what I say to people is the best way is just to send an international bank transfer or money order. Just by contacting me, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And I'm completely supported by the community. I don't get funding from anywhere, just from people who want to support my work. So That's very important, and thanks for asking.
Of course, no, definitely. I mean, thank you for your work, Kevin. You're very brave, and once again here, I want to give out the websites here at the end, itccs.org, and also check out hiddennolonger.com. If there's anything else now, then, Kevin, please give that out now.
No, those are the main two main sites, and again, just look forward to hearing from all of you, and certainly by August, I'll talk to you again with more of an update about the court case and the work I'll be doing in Europe.
Thank you for your time today, Kevin.
Thank you, Henry.
We'll be back with more radio before you know it. Next up, Lauren Coleman on James Holmes and the Aurora shootings. Linda Moulton-Howe, then Peter Lindberg from the Ocean X team. Daniel Pinchbeck, Jan Irving, William A. Gardner, Mark T. Grant, Rosa Corey, Walter Burian, and many, many more. Please go to our radio archive for a full list of our upcoming guests. Tune in at your convenience. All our programs are archived on the website redicecreations.com. Until next time, take good care, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.